Well, here I am with a little midweek podcast, kind of different. And the reason for this midweek podcast is because right here I'm holding in my hands the author proof of my newest book. It's called Reading Thought and Spirit. And it is this rather long, but I think kind of interesting book that looks at thousands of quotations from hundreds of different authors and really traces the history of man and God, and most importantly, really the history of God interfacing with man. And so what I want to do in this short podcast is just read to you the foreword I wrote for the book, and I hope it piques your interest, because I would love for you to grab a copy. I think it will be an interesting addition to your personal library. So, this is the foreword to my new book, Reading Thought and Spirit. When Jenny and I lived in Paris for a season, I would wake up many mornings, get myself out of the apartment and down the stairs, and then, walking the near-empty streets along the left bank of the Seine, I would cross the Pont au Double, head to the main front door of Notre Dame, and take up position in one of the furthest back rows of chairs. This was a time in my life when I actually thought that the only thing standing between me and literary notoriety was time and hard work. Plus, I thought, my quite obviously natural talent-finding voice. I get embarrassed when I think of that version of Eugene now. Nevertheless, under the overwhelming arc of the ceiling of that famous cathedral, I would then sit for an hour or two and think and ponder and write the best I knew how. And finally, when I was done, when I had written something I thought worthy of a certain other writer who once lived up along the Place de la Contrescarpe, I would tuck my pencils into my notebook and go home for breakfast, sometimes in bed, with my wonderful wife. Notre Dame would be left behind for the rest of the daylight hours, its interior only ever really known by me in that half-light of the day's dawning. But then, nearly every night, its exterior would come into play. We would walk down the old wood and then stone steps of our apartment building, out into the Rue de l'Hôtel Colbert, turn left, up two blocks, and then snaking through traffic across the quay. I don't recall ever seeing if there was a crosswalk nearby there. We'd always just jaywalk through the backed-up cars at that light to the left. Ahead of us would be the whole hulking mass of the cathedral, uplit, standing against the dark of the sky and perhaps a cloudy view of the stars. We'd then descend from the quay to the cobbled river walk along that particular stretch of river, between the Ponts de la Aravèche and the de la Tournelle, walking southeast with the cathedral watching over our left shoulders as we strolled, holding hands, talking. Turning left then, up ahead, across that next bridge, we'd cross toward the Île Saint-Louis, then walk back along its outer rim, then over across that next bridge, the one connecting the islands over that slantwise section of river. I remember sometimes musicians playing on the nearer end of the bridge, accordions, violins, that sort of thing. And all along, the cathedral was always there, silent, ponderous, meaningful in a received sort of way, all the attributes that most people attribute to the God who was once, at least theoretically, worshipped there. I think I must have remembered many of these internal, half-conscious impressions of Notre Dame as I watched it burn this past April. I certainly felt something watching the news come in. As the smoke billowed blackly, curling in the winds from the roof around that back steeple, I could remember so many afternoons sitting in the park just down below there. Specifically, I remembered sitting somewhere near its fountain with the smell of the dust in the air and the sound of the waters reading Proust. Specifically, it was The Past Recaptured. It was probably sometime in early September that year. And two, I could remember the feeling of the French language edition of The Old Man and the Sea in the back pocket of my corduroys, taking a turn through the Luxembourg weeks later, the leaves going a peculiar peachish orange. And I remembered sitting with Turgenev's Virgin Soil under the chestnut trees in the Tuileries as the afternoons were growing shorter now, cooler. And I could certainly remember Leaves of Grass for the fourth or fifth time in the Vergelon, Jenny's head resting upon me, the breeze up the river freshening late autumn. And I remembering passages from Bonhoeffer's Cost of Discipleship as I sat in the rain-wet gardens of the courtyard of the Carnavalette, looking up at the building-framed skies overhead. Why do I tell you all this? Perhaps it's because, while my natural senses obviously remember the awe and splendor of Notre Dame by dawn and dusk light, I don't particularly believe in cathedrals. Of course, yes, I believe in cathedrals. There they are. They're fairly difficult to miss as a city's most prominent landmarks. What I mean is, what an especially absurd human behavior is the building and consecration of such enormous, elaborate, flying buttressed edifices when the first Christian martyr, on his way to death, mentioned that the Most High does not live in man-made houses, Acts 7:48. And really, how spectacularly like the whole story of man is it to build for God, something he clearly proscribed from the beginning of his second covenant, paying no attention to what he actually ever said. And how funny to enter and be overcome by buildings that at best are totally ancillary to the cause and commission, at worst are a perfect picture of the whole disease. For what really is the house of God? Where are the true cathedrals of this new, this final covenant? Are they not the inner lives of men and women like you and me, heavenly interiors susceptible to invasion by the Spirit of God? In fact, isn't the greatest superstructure ever built by God, according to himself, the very frame he eventually personally chose to inhabit for himself? So, what if there are cavernous spaces, awe-inspiring, cathedralic aspects to the human heart, mind, and spirit that we haven't yet begun to explore? My friend, you are the cathedral of this covenant. Your eyes, the stained glass, your thoughts and ponderings and reasonings are holy incense that swirl atmospherically. All the books you read, the conversations you hold, the worship that swells your spirit, everything that claims the mantle of your inner life is the territory in which the God of the universe would like to live, abide, and grow his footprint. Really, he wants the whole of your life, nothing more, nothing less. He'd like to walk with you in the cool of the morning within your waking spirit. He'd like to converse with you through the heat and toil of your every workday. He'd like to take his every meal sitting alongside you. He'd like to rest within you all night as you rest. Do you realize you yourself are the place he considers holier than any other place upon the face of the earth? This book you're holding in your hands is a history of the story of man and God as it's been told to me by my own reading, thinking, and listening to the Holy Spirit. As you'll see, I've arranged more than 1,000 quotations by hundreds of authors, thinkers, and poets into 5 sections: man, God, God in man, and from 2 different vantage points, man in God. I've tried to construct the ordering of each individual part so that your reading from all these disparate voices creates a fluid, dynamic logic of the plan of God through history. You'll even see in italics ponderings and teachings of my own that have been stirred by all these years of reading, thought, and the Holy Spirit. So, welcome, my brother, my sister. Welcome, O holy cathedral of the new covenant. Let us learn of what man is, of who God is, of all that he's already accomplished in his Son, and of what we may now possess because of him. For his is a kingdom that can never be conquered or destroyed, and you are his holy place that no flame except his own can ever touch. Welcome.